Smith. But for a lot of us, we've never met another person with the same name as us. And if you're one of those like me, open YouTube, type in your name. Chances are there will be someone using your name and possibly either making you feel better or worse about yourself. So that Mark Bixler seemed to be well received by that audience, but he actually only has 8 followers on YouTube. But I have to say, wrestling might actually be my least favorite sport as well. I was in Derby, Kansas in the 6th, 7th, and 8th grades, and the toughest kid in our school of about 400 students in the 7th and 8th grades was Eddie Butler. Well, one day the PE teacher decided we'd wrestle, but he didn't do it like the competition sport. He had us all gather around the mat and do it tag team style. And I don't know who he chose to go first, but the simple rule was that when one of the wrestlers had had enough, he could tag someone else. And then they had to take his place against the kid who had either pinned him or made him wish that he had gotten pinned. And of course, when Eddie Butler got into the ring, everyone was afraid of him. And I don't know whether he pinned the kid who tagged me or the kid was too scared to even try, but the kid managed to tag me, so I had to get in with Eddie Butler. Well, it didn't take Eddie long to have me down on the mat, but as he tried to pin me, he actually tore my knee ligament and put me on crutches. So needless to say, I'm more of a lover than a fighter, but not because I'm such a good person. It's more a matter of fear and self-preservation. So let's read the Beatitudes together. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. So, is it just coincidence that we're on this blessing one day after the attack on Iran? I don't know if there are coincidences, but according to historian Will Durant, who compiled this statistic back in 1968, there had been 3,431 years of known wars in world history and only 268 years of peace. Now, of course, there were always people warring against other people in smaller wars, and so we can conclude that there is and never has been world peace. In a 10-year period, about 7 million divorces occur in the U.S. That would involve 14 million adults, likely 20 million children. People who are living together but do not marry have even less stability in their relationships, so there is no peace in relationships. Maybe we can find peace within. Paul Stuckey, you remember Peter, Paul, and Mary? He observed that during the 60s, one of the most popular magazines was Life. And then during the 70s, a more popular one narrowed it down to People. And then another one came along called Us. And finally, the one that got down to what people really cared most about was called Self. The baby boomer generation, those of us between 60 and 80 years old, has been called the me generation. The proliferation of self-help books and magazines reflect a desperate run from inner turmoil to search for inner peace. That's why you go in a bookstore and you're going to see a huge section of self-help books. Well, if inner peace were there, the books wouldn't sell. This does establish one thing, though. People want peace. We're not made for constant conflict. We need peace. A friend of mine knew a man who faced arguing, conflict, and criticism every morning at the breakfast table. And so after breakfast, he would get in his car and he would drive down out of sight of his house, stop the car, get out, and vomit in the ditch every day. So if we want peace, if we need peace, why is there so little peace? Well, the truth is, almost everyone wants peace. You know, the supreme leader of Iran wanted peace. Vladimir Putin wants peace. Those who persecute Christians in India and Nigeria want peace. Our politicians on both sides of the aisle want peace. So again, if we want peace, if we need peace, why is there so little peace? Well, it really boils down to the fact that there are many peace lovers, but not so many peacemakers. Why is that? Well, it's because peacemaking involves sacrifice. Peace lovers want peace, but they want it on their own terms. We all want peace, but we usually insist on our own terms. But the good news is that we can be peacemakers. In fact, if we are following Christ, we will be peacemakers. But what if all of those around us are only peace lovers? Doesn't it take two sides giving equally to make peace? No. That is a lie that Satan wants us to believe, but it's one of those twisted lies, and it's one of Satan's great lies. It takes two sides to make peace. The truth is that it takes two to fight, but it does not take two to make peace. Think about that. If one person refuses to fight or to be in conflict, that one has made peace, and maybe without any help from the other party. Now, that's not always fair. Usually it's not fair. But if we complain about the unfairness of that and refuse to be the peacemaker, then we are forgetting that God has provided the ultimate example of one-sided peacemaking. The truth that defies human history and the personal experience of most of humanity is revealed by Jesus. And that is that, first and most importantly, we can be at peace with God. What we must remember is that He is the initiator. He is the peacemaker. Well, what happened when Jesus came? Well, what happened to Jesus is like what happened one day in the South when some boys decided to go swimming in a little farm pond that had become infested with poisonous water moccasins. They jumped in, and those snakes latched onto the boys and pumped their venom into them, and they died. Jesus came into our world, and He was pounced upon. Satan was the snake, but our sins and all of the sins of humanity were the venom that was pumped into His bloodstream. He died. But in His case, it was not a surprise. And that was not the end of His story. But that fact did not make His death any less painful. So why did He do it? Because He was a peacemaker. Let's go to Ephesians. Talking to us. As for you, you were dead in your transgressions and sins, in which you used to live when you followed the ways of this world and the ruler of the kingdom of the air, the spirit who is now at work in those who are disobedient. All of us lived among them at one time, gratifying the cravings of our sinful nature and following its desires and thoughts. Like the rest, we were by nature objects of wrath. But because of His great love for us, God, who is rich in mercy, made us alive with Christ even when we were dead in transgressions. It is by grace you have been saved. So now we can have peace with God, and we have Jesus' example as a peacemaker. This is how you live as a peacemaker. Peacemaking becomes our responsibility so that we can be at peace with others. So the truth revealed by Jesus is that we can be at peace with God, most importantly, but we can also be at peace with others, which is almost of equal importance, if not the same. So look at how Paul tells the Ephesians that this peace with God makes it their responsibility to make peace with others. Therefore, remember that formerly you who are Gentiles by birth and called uncircumcised by those who call themselves the circumcision, that done in the body by the hands of men. Remember that at that time you were separate from Christ, excluded from citizenship in Israel, and foreigners to the covenants of the promise, without hope and without God in the world. But now, in Christ Jesus, you who once were far away have been brought near through the blood of Christ. For he himself is our peace, who has made the two one and has destroyed the barrier, the dividing wall of hostility, by abolishing in his flesh the law with its commandments and regulations. His purpose was to create in himself one new man out of the two, thus making peace, and in this one body to reconcile both of them to God through the cross, by which he put to death their hostility. He came and preached peace to you who are far away, and peace to those who are near. For through him we both have access to the Father by one Spirit. Those who are far away were the Gentiles, people like us. Those who are near were the Jews. But through him we both have access to the Father by the same Spirit. Now, this was huge in their world. It was something that both sides would never have thought was possible. Many Jews considered all non-Jews to be dogs who were created and allowed to exist for no other reason than to inhabit hell. Now, of course, that attitude resulted in extreme hatred of the Jews in typical non-Jewish society. So if Jews and Gentiles could be brought together, individuals could be brought together in their relationships as well. And that's what Paul begins to stress in chapter 4. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. And then look at chapter 5. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. This is how we make peace and keep peace. Now, this is the only verse where the word submit actually occurs, but in the next verse it says, wives to your husbands. So submit is added there to make it sound a little more flowing in English, but it says, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ, wives to your husbands as to the Lord. That's how wives are to make peace. Husbands, how are they to make peace? How are they to submit? Love your wives, just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. In this same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. Well, how are children to make peace? How are they to submit? Children, obey your parents in the Lord. Well, what about fathers? How do you submit to your children? Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Well, how about workers? In their case, slaves. Slaves, obey your earthly masters, your bosses, with respect and fear, and with sincerity of heart, just as you would obey Christ. Well, what about the bosses, the masters? Masters, treat your slaves in the same way. Do not threaten them, since you know that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven, and there is no favoritism with him. And so, submission is nothing more than peacemaking. Whatever your relationship, we can make it more peaceful by doing what Jesus did. What is the blessing in Matthew 5? The blessing is that they shall be called children or sons of God. All right? So if Jesus had been writing corny advertising copy in our day, he might have said, blessed are the Rolaids because they consume 47 times their weight in excess acid. You know, we can consume all of that excess acid in our world, in our relationships, because we have the Spirit there to actually be the substance that consumes that acid. Or maybe we can think of ourselves as shock absorbers. You know, we can be shock absorbers as we travel the rocky roads of our relationships. It was necessary for me to be a peacemaker when I went and met with the elders who had, I believe, not lived up to their commitment to support us as we planted a church in Germany. That was the plan. And then they found out that our support was going to cost more than they had thought. They were paying us in German marks, and the dollar was, you know, not doing so well against the German mark, and so every month they had to spend a little bit more, and then it was going to be even more expensive to move to Bonn, where we planned to plant a church. They had plenty of money to follow through with what they had promised, but they decided to back out after we had spent just a couple of years in Germany learning the language, preparing to try to do what we were planning to do. Well, they had also promised to pay for the expenses of moving. Well, when we finally decided to move our stuff back, we were going to try to find support to go back. We did try, but it wasn't working out that quickly, and so we had to move our stuff back. Well, they had planned to, you know, they had promised to pay for those expenses, but when those expenses were revealed after we had returned, they said, "We're not going to pay those unless you come and talk to us." I did not want to talk to them. I was 24 years old. These guys were all successful businessmen who seemed to have no respect for me. And so every time I would think about what they had done, my stomach would get upset. It was just, you know, I couldn't think about it without that. Well, I had to drive 2 hours from Memphis, where we were living at the time, to Little Rock, where that church was. And so as I drove, I listened to a tape of a sermon on this beatitude. It was my favorite preacher, Jim Woodruff. I'm borrowing a lot of stuff from him in this sermon, actually. But I went into that meeting determined to be a peacemaker. But that didn't lead me to just say what, you know, that they were right in how they handled the situation. But I was able to calmly say to them that, you know what, you were my shepherds and my family's shepherds, and it was your responsibility to care for me and my family, not to mention the commitment that they should have felt to the German people that we were trying to save from their conflict with God and their conflict with the world. And because I was able to say it as a peacemaker, they listened. And at least one of them was very thankful for that. And they did pay our expenses to come back. But if I hadn't gone with the determination to be done with the conflict between us, then the meeting would have only made things worse. But I actually benefited more than they did. That's the thing. I never had an upset stomach again after that meeting, even when I played those things out in my mind again. And I counted out that any of them had ever had any upset stomach in the first place, so they didn't really benefit as much from that meeting as I did. But making peace with others is always possible if those others are only willing to accept our love and sacrifice. And yet there's an even greater mission that we have as peacemakers, and that is that we can be instruments of peace. We can help others to find peace with God. We certainly see this demonstrated in Paul's life, back up to chapter 3 of Ephesians. "I became a servant of this gospel by the gift of God's grace given me through the working of his power. Although I am less than the least of all God's people, this grace was given me to preach to the Gentiles the unsearchable riches of Christ." It is a great power and privilege to tell others about God's love and the peace that is available to them, as it is to us. But never forget this word of warning. Preaching the unsearchable riches of God's grace will be fruitless without a demonstration of love and sacrifice. We cannot pretend to reconcile others to God if we need to be reconciled to others. We must be peacemakers at the grassroots level before we have anything to say about the needs of others to be reconciled to God. You see, our own relationship with God has fundamental problems if there are problems in our relationships with people. Let's go back to Matthew. Jesus speaks to two different scenarios that we might find ourselves in that involve conflict with others. The first is in chapter 5, just a few verses after this blessing. "If you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remind that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First, go and be reconciled to your brother, then come and offer your gift. See, in this situation, you are the offender. Well, what is your responsibility? You take the initiative and make peace. Now, that seems reasonable. You're the offender, right? Go to them. But look at the other scenario in Matthew 18. If your brother sins against you, go and show him his fault just between the two of you. If he listens to you, you have won your brother over. But if he will not listen to you, take one or two others along so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. It's a quotation of an Old Testament law. But if he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, treat him as you would a pagan or a tax collector. Now in this one, you're the victim. But notice that either way, Jesus says, you be the initiator. As Paul says in Romans 12, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. When people see the attitude of a peacemaker in us, they are nearer to God than they were before. In fact, the only way that we can bring people closer to God is to let His Spirit rule in us and then get close to them. The words of Isaiah the prophet that revealed the nature of Jesus and His rulership talk about peace. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on His shoulders, and He will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of His government and peace, there will be no end. The peace in His government, which is His rulership over us, affects every area of our lives. Peace at home, peace between friends, peace on the job, world peace, inner peace, and most importantly, peace between us and God. Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace is a poem that is often attributed to Francis of Assisi, but it actually cannot be found anywhere before 1912, 700 years or so after he died. But that doesn't really matter. It became very popular during the times of World War I and World War II. And what matters is its message. After it was translated into English, it was in French originally. It was even read into the Congressional Record in 1928, around the World War I time. And so this is our prayer today. I'll read it, and then we're going to sing it together with a video, since we don't know this song. But Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. All of that is about making peace. O divine master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive. It is in pardoning that we are pardoned. And it is in dying that we are born to eternal life. Let's stand and sing this song together.